It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where the skies are partly cloudy to partly sunny, 52 degrees in Kodiak, 75% humidity, northwest winds at 10 miles per hour, and they have 10 miles of visibility at the airport. Coming up on the Midday Report, more details about the plane and helicopter that collided midair over Katmai National Park earlier this week. New Alaska Education Commissioner Dina Bishop defends the Alaska Board of Education's policy to ban trans athletes from girl sports. And the Matanuskas, who sit in the school board, has voted to silence its student representative. Those stories plus marine debris in Sitka after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. World leaders are gathering for the G20 summit, where Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the climate crisis are among the issues expected to dominate talks. NPR's Asma Khalid reports on closely watched bilateral discussions between President Biden and the event's host, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi.
No journalists were in the room for any portion of this meeting. But afterwards, the president's top advisor for the region, Kurt Campbell, told reporters the two men recognize their shared purpose.
What I have seen grow over time is an undeniable warmth and confidence between the two leaders.
Officials say the meeting built on some of the agreements that were forged this summer when Modi visited Washington for a state dinner. Press access has been a big topic in India. Reporters won't be in the room for much of the G20 summit, and that underscores the challenges in working with partners who may not fully embrace all of the same values. The president's advisors say he is not shy about bringing up these tough issues, but he does it behind closed doors with a sense of humility. Asma Khalid, NPR News, New Delhi.
A final report reveals that the special grand jury that determined prosecutors should charge former President Donald Trump and 18 others in an election subversion case in Georgia actually recommended charges for nearly two dozen additional people. Here's WABE Sam Greenglass.
This investigative panel voted nearly unanimously to recommend indicting Donald Trump, and they suggested charging more of his allies, including U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham and former U.S. Senators David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler, who in the end weren't charged. It was ultimately up to prosecutors to decide who they would ask a regular grand jury to charge. Some people were offered immunity deals. In other cases, prosecutors had to weigh whether they could eventually prove a case beyond a reasonable doubt. A trial date has yet to be set for Trump and most of his 18 co-defendants. For NPR News, I'm Sam Greenglass in Atlanta.
The country is preparing to commemorate the 22nd anniversary of the 9/11 terrorist attacks. The Department of Defense held a ceremony today to remember the 184 lives lost at the Pentagon and the thousands more people who were killed in New York City and near Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Deputy Defense Secretary Kathleen Hicks was at the Pentagon the day of the attack.
Many of us have personal memories of what happened that day. An increasing share of Americans don't. They were too young or they hadn't even been born yet. Even so, 9/11 has impacted their lives, and they should know how and why.
Hicks noted that the year after terrorists launched attacks on U.S. soil, more than 245,000 young people answered the call to serve in the military. This is NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. A plane and a helicopter collided in midair over Katmai National Park earlier this week. The plane's pilot and passengers reported no injuries, but the helicopter's pilot was injured in the crash. KMXT's Brian Benoit reports more details are emerging about the crash.
A de Havilland Beaver operated by Alaska's Enchanted Lake Lodge, Inc. and a Bell 206L4 helicopter operated by Maritime Helicopters crashed into each other over Labor Day weekend. The accident took place at about 4:30 p.m. on Monday afternoon near Lake Coville in the northern area of Katmai National Park and Preserve. Clint Johnson is the Alaska Region Chief for the National Transportation Safety Board.
It was struck in the tail rotor section. The back of the helicopter basically was damaged. The airplane was able to make an emergency landing in a nearby creek, and the helicopter descended uncontrollably into an area of tundra and tree-covered terrain.
The helicopter pilot was able to walk away from the incident. However, he was still brought to Anchorage for further medical examination. Katmai National Park doesn't have an air traffic control tower to coordinate takeoffs and landings. Mark Sturm is the park's superintendent. He says pilots usually communicate over radios to prevent collisions like this one.
Pilots that come into the park essentially are in touch with each other and try to manage the traffic locally by talking to each other about how they're approaching, what they're doing, and being in contact with planes on the ground. But obviously in this case, these two aircraft were not in communication and the accident happened as a consequence.
The vehicles were about 1,000 feet above ground when they collided, according to preliminary information. Johnson with the NTSB says investigators are still talking to both pilots.
What we're trying to do now is trying to figure out how these two airplanes came together, ultimately determine if each one of the pilots were able to see each other, and kind of the circumstances that led up to it.
Johnson says a preliminary report is expected later this month. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Vanois.
This week marks 1 month for Dina Bishop in her role as Alaska Education Commissioner. One of the more controversial education policies that's come forward in her short tenure has to do with trans girls competing in high school sports. Last week, the Alaska Board of Education unanimously voted to approve a ban on transgender athletes participating in girls' high school sports. In an interview this week, Bishop defended the action, saying it's in line with federal Title IX provisions from the Biden administration.
It's not eliminating any transgender girls from sports totally. It is just mentioning that school districts that choose to have a female-only team, that they would be biological females or females assigned at birth.
But the decision has been blasted by others, including Jarrett Bryant, who took over the Anchorage School District superintendent job from Bishop. He questioned why, with all of the other challenges facing public schools, the board was focused on what appears to be a non-urgent issue. Bishop says reading is among the issues she's focused on. She touted the Alaska Reads Act, a bill passed last year that provides funding for pre-K programs, uses reading screeners to identify students falling behind, and gives grants to low-performing districts. Bishop says, combined with individual reading plans designed to help students falling behind in reading, teachers will have more tools to bolster literacy rates.
The competencies and capacity that Alaska's teachers are building in the science of reading is going to really impact in a great way, in a good way, students' ability to read.
Bishop says she's also focused on retaining teachers and suggested an increase to state funding for schools might be necessary. The Mat-Su School Board voted on Wednesday to remove most opportunities for their student representative to participate on the board. Despite overwhelming opposition from the public, the board voted 5-2 to remove the ability for the student representative to cast a preferential vote and participate in discussions. 22 people testified against the proposed changes to the board policy, and just one member of the public spoke in favor. Quinlan Shacklin is a senior at Wasilla High School and president of three student government groups.
By taking away this position, you symbolically communicate with us students that our voices do not matter enough to have a true say in what occurs in our community.
Board members did not offer their reasons for the changes at the meeting. Instead, they argued in favor of more student representation to the board from a broader group of students. Kathy McCollum is the school board clerk.
Personally, I would like to hear opinions, concerns, comments, good things from a bigger variety of students.
According to the Alaska Association of School Boards, 28 Alaska school districts have student board representatives. Kalendo is a senior at Career Tech High School in Wasilla. He gave an impassioned speech just before the board voted to remove most of his duties as student representative.
These disheartening developments have cast a shadow over my ability to continue as a willing participant within a system that, to my dismay, seems to place our self-interest above the authentic needs of our students.
Kalendo is the only student representative who has ever been elected twice to the position since it was created in 1979. Whether it's in the Bering Sea or Sitka Sound, a beach cleanup is a major undertaking, often with limited benefits. So much debris washes ashore on Alaska's coastline that it could never all be collected and hauled away. But that doesn't mean it's not a problem worth trying to solve. Recently, the Ocean Conservancy took an unusual group of people on a beach cleanup near Sitka to wrap their hands around some marine debris and to wrap their minds around what to do about it. KCAW's Meredith Reddick helped in the cleanup and filed this report.
The original destination for the cleanup is a cove on Bjorka Island outside of Sitka, but that beach has too much kelp for the boat to safely offload passengers, so the captain reroutes. To get off at the second destination on the eastern side of Kruzoff Island means waiting an hour for the tide to come in.
I will say that it's never gone exactly how I thought it would when I was doing the planning.
Christina Tierman coordinates the Arctic Marine Debris Program for the Ocean Conservancy. She is all too familiar with the challenges of marine debris cleanup in Alaska.
It's hard to do cleanups here. It's hard to get to the beaches that need the most help because those beaches are often the ones that are the most exposed. And so you can imagine that the reason that they're covered in driftwood and garbage is because there's waves that are crashing and there's all these other factors that, you know, lead to marine debris being there, also lead to those beaches being difficult to access.
After waiting for the tide to turn, the group of 40, including volunteers, Coast Guard commanders, and congressional staffers from Senator Dan Sullivan's office, disembarks on the black sand beach. The scene looks a little like an Easter egg hunt, with debris seekers peering under rocks and behind tufts of beach grass for trash.
Lots of plastic water bottles. Oh, and we found a Korean hagfish, part of a Korean hagfish trap.
Linda Benkin, who runs the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association in Sitka, helps heave part of a brightly colored trawl net out from under a driftwood log. It's so heavy that a dozen people are enlisted to carry the pieces back to the boat. Tierman says this net and much of the debris that washes up on Alaska's shores can be traced to sources many miles away.
You know, we saw after the 2011 tsunami in Japan, a lot of tsunami debris come over this way. And so a lot of the debris just comes from all over.
One of Alaska's debris hotspots is around St. Paul Island, 1,300 miles from Sitka in the Bering Sea. Lauren Devine runs the Ecosystem Conservation Office for the Aleut community of St. Paul. She's here today with her 18-month-old daughter, Amelia, who is squatting in tiny extra tufts in the sand.
Can you get the debris off the ground? Can you pick up the trash?
That might be our first piece of trash.
In St. Paul, Devine says debris has a major impact on the island's fur seal population.
What we get is like packing bands or pieces of trawl net or fishing line that are wrapped around the seals, and it usually happens when they're really young and they go into the water for the first time or over their first winter, and then they try to swim through something, they get it stuck around their neck, and then they grow.
In remote Alaska, the challenge doesn't end when beaches are clean. Disposal is a huge problem. She spent part of the summer repackaging debris from a previous cleanup. She says the sacks full of garbage sat out so long that the bags started to degrade.
it's like over 300 super sacks that have never been able to get backhauled. So they were sitting out in the environment, and they basically like grew back into the landscape and then started degrading and putting the debris back out in the environment. Yeah, back out in the environment.
Marine debris is not only dangerous for wildlife, it can also be a hazard to human health and safety. Shellfish in Sitka, which are an important subsistence food, have been found to contain microplastics. Ghost fishing, where abandoned fishing gear continues to catch and kill fish, is another side effect. Benkin says it can even be perilous to fishermen.
So, yeah, just last month we had the one-day king salmon opening, one day. And we had a member who was starting off really well in the morning. He was catching kings, and then he got tangled in a huge piece of trawl web. Took out two of his full lines, and it was tangled in his stabilizer.
As they walk along the beach, researchers from the Ocean Conservancy are cataloging the types of debris with clipboards and pencils. Part of their goal is to collect data on what is washing up and where. That could help guide lawmakers to advocate for policies to help prevent marine debris from accumulating. Back at Sitka's Crescent Harbor, volunteers load two full truckloads of debris, which will be sorted for recycling or hauled to the waste transfer station. With that, today's cleanup is over, and one small piece of Alaska's coastline is a little bit cleaner. Tierman says that even though there's still work to do, building awareness of the problem by hosting cleanups and by sharing photos and data from the events is a good first step.
I think a lot of people picture the Alaskan wilderness and ecosystems as being really, you know, clean and not impacted by garbage because, you know, our population is so low. But I think when people see photos of the beaches here and just how impacted they are by marine debris, it's really eye-opening.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Meredith Reddick.
Celebrated climbers Alex Honnold and Tommy Caldwell summited Devil's Thumb in late August, but they couldn't have pulled it off without the counsel of a local Petersburg climber who's had a decades-long love affair with the mountain. KFSK's Shelby Herbert has the story on Dieter Close, who is passing the torch to the next generation of legendary climbers.
Standing outside his little cabin on the edge of the rainforest, Dieter Close gazes out at the ocean. He built this place in the shadow of the giant rock. On this day, a wall of fog blocks his view, but Close knows exactly what's behind those clouds.
It looks just like a German beer stein. It's a little wider at the bottom, so it doesn't tip over when you're drunk. There's only room for one person at the top, and you can just barely stand if you have the courage.
Close stood there himself, twice. He can't even count how many unsuccessful climbs it took. His best guess is a dozen. He's the only person to make it halfway up the unclimbed northwest face and come back alive. Close has been climbing since he was a kid. He moved to Petersburg in 1982. At first, he lived behind a cemetery in a borrowed tent.
It got torn up by a bear, and a friend of mine told me, hey, there's a boat for sale for $200. And I thought, great, and I'll get to look at Devil's Thumb.
Close says it wasn't love at first sight. Or first summit. His enchantment with the mountain grew over the course of his life.
It had everything I wanted from mountains, everything that satisfied me by climbing. It's difficult by any side, and it's not super high altitude, which is great. You're totally alone, and it's a wild-looking thing.
Close is a home builder by trade. He hurt his back at work a few years ago. The injury all but ended his climbing career, but he's still known to climbers in the region as the godfather of the Stikine ice caps.
I mean, Dieter is, he's key to anybody who comes here to climb.
That's world-class climber Tommy Caldwell. He came up north recently to climb Devil's Thumb and shoot a documentary about it. Dieter advised him and his climbing partner, Alex Honnold.
I mean, there's just nobody else that knows nearly as much about the Double Thumb.
Yeah.
He's like the local custodian. He's like managing the mountain.
Close helped draft their route. It tags every peak up and down the whole massif, over the twin summits of the Witch's Towers, the slender Cat's Ears Spires, and then the looming cathedral of Devil's Thumb itself. Caldwell says those features were as wicked as the sound of their names.
All of the summits are, like, incredibly pointy. Yeah, you climb up it and you're sitting on the summit and there's, like, thousands and thousands of feet drop on either side of you. It's one of the more, like, exposed feeling summits I've ever seen in my life.
Hours before they left Alaska, both climbers came by to write in a book that Dieter Close keeps about the mountain. It contains the names of everybody to ever summit in living history. Alex and Tommy sketched out a map of their route that took up two whole pages. Back in front of his cabin, Close gazes across the sound. He says the view is actually better from down here.
You're not necessarily enjoying yourself. On difficult climbs. You're getting tired and thirsty, hungry, all of that. And it's not until you get back into the valley and look up at that mountain, and then you get some real joy out of it.
Climbing Devil's Thumb today would be difficult for him, but Dieter Close says he still dreams about one last summit. In Petersburg, I'm Shelby Herbert.
Home loan applications are at a three-decade low. I'm Novosafo with a Marketplace Minute. 1995 was the last time the Mortgage Bankers Association's index of application volume was as low as it registered last week. Applications plummeted nearly 30% compared to a year ago, with not enough homes available for purchase and interest rates at two-decade highs. The Kroger supermarket chain is paying more than $1 billion to settle claims tied to opioid prescriptions filled by in-store pharmacies. The company said it will make the payments over 11 years and that they're tax deductible. President Biden is in India this weekend for a summit of G20 leaders. On the table is a potential infrastructure deal to move cargo between Middle East countries, India, and Turkey. I'm Novosafo with a Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the 8th day of September, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 7:24 and it will set again at 8:48 this evening, giving us 13 hours and 23 minutes of daylight. A loss of 4 minutes and 54 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high of this date was 67 degrees, set in 1985, 1987, and 2010. And our record low was 35 degrees, set in 2012. Currently 52 degrees under mostly to partly cloudy skies. They have northwest winds to 10 miles per hour at the airport, 10 miles of visibility, and 75% humidity. They're calling for partly sunny skies for today and tomorrow, albeit with a 40% chance of showers after 2 p.m. this afternoon, high near 54 today with northwest winds to 15. Just a chance of showers before 11 p.m. tonight, and then a slight chance of showers after 2 a.m. with mostly cloudy skies overnight with a low of 46, northwest winds to 15. And partly sunny for tomorrow with a high near 54, southwest winds to 10, becoming southeast in the afternoon. Sounds like a nice day for the block party downtown. Let's check in with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 42, issued 9 a.m. September 5th. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Wednesday, September 6th, till 6 p.m. Friday, September 8th, in the inner Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District. Closed waters adjustment. Closed waters will be reduced from noon Wednesday, September 6th, to 6 p.m. Friday, September 8th, in the following area. At Karluk Lagoon's exit channel terminus at the ocean shoreline. As previously announced, the following areas are open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice. The Outer Aikuluk, Outer Karluk, Sturgeon, and Halibut Bay sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, the Northeast Kodiak District, the Eastside Kodiak District, Cape Alatak, Alatak Bay, Humpy Deadman, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District, northwest of Fog Neck, Raspberry Strait, Duck Bay, Iziut Bay, Outer Gatoy Bay, southwest of Fog Neck, and northeast of Fog Neck sections of the Fog Neck District and the Mainland District. Closed waters are expanded until further notice in that portion of the southwest of Fog Neck section of the Fog Neck District within 1/2 nautical mile of the beach near the terminus of Molina Creek. Until further notice, within the Kodiak area, only that portion of northwest Kodiak and southwest Kodiak districts south of latitude of Cape Kuliuk, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purseine gear and must be returned to the water unharmed. Cost recovery fisheries began the Katoa Bay Special Harvest Area on September 2nd. Cost recovery information may be obtained by calling 486-6559. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak area stat charts and detailed in the commercial salmon fishing regs. Stat charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. Recent salmon fishery announcement information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559.
Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Northwest winds to 20 knots for today and tonight with 4-foot seas. South 15 for tomorrow with 6-foot seas, and for Sunday, northeast 30, seas coming up to 14 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, northwest 20 today with 3-foot seas, northwest 15 tonight with 3-foot seas, and southwest 15 tomorrow with seas at 3 feet. On Sunday in the Shelikof, northeast 25, seas coming up to 9 feet. Well, a couple of big announcements for those of you who operate motor vehicles. Brecken Construction will be paving today and tomorrow at least on Mission Road. And the road will be closed from lot 615 to the intersection of 12th Avenue. That whole area around Ismailoff and Walkoff and 12th Avenue will be inaccessible while they're paving. The road will be closed from the west side of Spruce Avenue to the intersection of 12th Avenue. And local residents must have their vehicles out of the work zone by 7 a.m. each day. That's today and tomorrow at least. They will have to have, you will have access to your driveways at the end of each work shift. Parking on the road is prohibited, and please watch for equipment, workers, flaggers, and signage. Call Brecken at 907-486-3215 with any questions. And if you can avoid Mission Road at all, please do so. Also, for those of you parking vehicles in the downtown parking area that's in front of the mall, from the Safeway Liquor to the Mecca, that area needs to be cleared tomorrow morning by 8 a.m. The second annual community block party is taking over that entire space from noon to 8 p.m., and folks need to start setting up first thing in the morning. So please make your arrangements to move your vehicles today or first thing in the morning. But remember, if you leave your car there wisely and take a cab home, let's say, that car needs to be out of there by 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. Also, come celebrate the block party. They're going to have lots of great events, food, and music, noon to 8 p.m. in that area right downtown.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Kodiak, and welcome to the September 8th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Ah, September. This might be my favorite month of the year. Days with the azure blue skies, dramatic sunrises and sunsets, with plenty of low golden light in the mornings and evenings. Top it all off with starry nights and increasingly crisp air. Perfect. Vegetable gardens are being harvested now while the flower gardens hang in there for a little while longer. Speaking of which, hang on to those flowers for a while if you can. Not only are the bees still out and about looking for things to eat, the hummingbirds are showing up in some gardens too. both the bees and the hummingbirds like nasturtiums and petunias sometimes this time of year. So let those blossoms hang on as long as you can. We get two different varieties of hummingbirds around here, the Rufus and the Anna's hummingbirds. The Rufus is mostly a reddish-brown, while the Anna's female hummingbird is mostly green, and the male has a green body and an iridescent reddish head. They're all very striking, and it's just a lot of fun to see one feeding on the flowers in your garden. It's the weekend of auditions. On Sunday, from noon until 2, Fairwind Players invite you to audition for Boo 2, a series of sometimes silly, sometimes scary skits, and a short play made for the Halloween season. There are roles for all ages. Come and join the fun. Auditions for the Kodiak Arts Council's winter season music show called Joy start at 2 p.m. on the main stage at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. Auditions are for the community choir or the community orchestra, which will be performing seasonal favorites in a December concert directed by Jill Rohr and Angie Cherinak. Auditions are open to adults 18 and older. That's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.